Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program at the Commonwealth Club of California. My name is Dr. David Okola, and I'm the chairperson for the personal growth section and your moderator for today's event. We also like to welcome our radio listeners, and we invite our audiences to visit us at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure and honor to introduce our distinguished speaker. If there was such a thing as a PhD in chaos, our presenter, Brendan Murphy, would have, by now, earned two. Brendan has been both blessed and challenged by chaos since growing up in the Murphy household, where Murphy's Law definitely held sway. His chaotic journey has included steps as a firefighter, teacher, youth minister, programmer, disc jockey, and public speaker. Along the way, his experiences have taught him about dealing with the chaotic. He is excited to share what he has learned here today. So please help me welcome our chaos master, Brendan Murphy. Brendan Murphy.
Run! That, Mr. Okola, fellow guest and Commonwealth Club members, was the command of a true chaos master, Mike Powers. I had just graduated from college and decided to fight forest fires to put a dent in my debt. My very first fighter was in Nevada. We had traveled all night to get there and were afraid of what was going to happen next. And we got burnout duty. Ah, glorious burnout duty. All we had to do was follow a trail made by a caterpillar bulldozer up a hill and light small trees and brush on fire. The main fire was 5 miles away. We didn't even have to worry about it. By the time that got there, at the end of the day, it would find no fuel left and would just simply pitter out. This was great fun. Toughest thing was bending over and lighting some bushes. Mike went up and over the hill to check on how far we had to go. Minutes later, he came running past us, yelling, "Run!" We stopped and looked. We were shocked. Mike was so out of shape, we couldn't believe he was capable of running, even downhill. We started to laugh until we heard the sound of popcorn. But it wasn't popping corn. It was popping trees. The fire that had been so far away was wind-whipped and consumed everything in its path. It was right upon us and caused the moisture within the trees to turn into steam and explode the trunks of the trees, sounding like so much popcorn. But we didn't want to run. We were trained not to run. We were trained to pop and drop using our U.S. Forest Service officially sanctioned fire shelter. We would take that, open it, spread it out, and then lay face down and allow it to cover us. Theoretically, it would deflect all the heat from the fire. And theoretically, we would not end up like foil-wrapped baked potatoes. We decided to skip a step in the process. We just dropped the shelters. We dropped our fire torches. We dropped our tools, our helmets, anything else we could drop. We got rid of as we pursued Mike while being pursued by the flames. It was a surreal moment in my life. Seeing trees on either side of me being burnt and in flame, feeling the heat on my back and the hot air burning my lungs as I ran. But at that time, all I could think about were my mother's parting words when I went to go fight fires. "Well, don't make an ash out of yourself." Thanks, Mom. Michael leapt and disappeared. Like learned lemmings, we followed him over a 10-foot embankment, diving into a dry riverbed. The fire impotently passed over us. we had escaped with our lives. Michael was a true chaos master that day. He saw the situation and realized that our process could not handle what was coming. His ability to improvise and analyze the situation saved our lives. But what is chaos? Your chaos may not be my chaos. Chaos so much depends on your perspective and your situation. There are some classic examples of chaos. First, emergency. When people are in an emergency situation, a lot of times it feels chaotic. But most of the time, it's not. People know what to do. Quick quiz. Fire alarm goes off here in the Commonwealth Club. What do you do? Anybody, what would you do if the fire alarm went off right now? Scream? Okay, that's not... Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah, Marie. Go to one of the exits. It's an emergency situation, but it's not necessarily chaotic because people can go out the door, except for David, who's going to sit here and scream. But that's the difference between chaos and process. We had a process. It's an emergency, but it's not necessarily chaos. Other times, like Mike and our crew fighting a forest fire, our process couldn't handle it. It was an emergency. It was also chaos. More standard view of chaos is crisis. You can see that right now in the state financial crisis with our budget. It's been going on for years. It's not an emergency situation, but it is a crisis. It affects people's lives today and definitely for the future. But my favorite form of chaos, going to have to pronounce that word eventually, excuse me, is Ijdwa. Yes, there are moments of Ijdwa chaos in your life. When you've been doing something again and again, and all of a sudden, it just doesn't work anymore. It just doesn't work anymore, like me and pizza consumption. I love pizza, but it just doesn't work anymore for me to eat pizza. It happens that the process I've been using fails, and so now chaos takes over, and I have to make some adjustments. Now, many people have attempted to define chaos throughout the years. The ancient Greeks said chaos was nothingness, a total lack of anything. It was the opposite for them from cosmos, a universe that not only existed, but had an ordered existence. An archaic term of chaos in Old English was that chaos was a chasm, a cliff, something that prevented you from continuing on your way. Of course, today, chaos is used as disorder or confusion. I would like to propose a different definition. Chaos is just like fire. Fire can be a creative force or destructive force. And how you handle chaos when it's like fire is how you become a chaos master. What do you do with that situation that can be destructive or constructive? How do you take disorder and turn it into order? How do you find the rhythm and the pattern that just seems inescapable once you get there? How do you do that? That's what makes you a chaos master. So dealing with that fire, which is so powerful, both positively and negatively, makes you a chaos master. So a chaos master is a fire dancer. A fire dance is crazy, frenetic, even a little bit dangerous. But it helps you find the order in the disorder. Excuse me. So my job here today is to sell you on something. I want to sell you on the concept of being a fire dancer, being a chaos master. And to do that, you can do it in three simple steps. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3, preparation, execution, and reflection. P-E-R. These three steps guide you in being a process master, a chaos master, that fire dancer who's able to find order in disorder. Preparation. In the fields of observation, chance favors only the prepared mind. That by Louis Pasteur, a man who faced the chaos of founding a new science, microbiology. This quote has been used many different ways, such as luck favors the prepared. But I like this quote because it has the emphasis on prepared mind. So how do you prepare your mind when chaos is unknowable? You prepare it generally. You prepare yourself generally by knowing your general philosophies, by being able to realize what are your general parameters, and also taking the opportunity to do some general practice. Your general ability to Your general ability to know your philosophy is key. Do you know this man? His name is Hank Paulson, former treasurer, Secretary of the Treasury of the United States of America. One thing about his specific philosophy was he loved capitalism. He truly loved that system of capitalism and free markets. He didn't want government interference. He didn't want government regulation. He just wanted to have the markets run as they would, totally free. But then in the spring of 2008, he spent $19 billion of government money to make sure the financial company Bear Stearns did not go out of business. Then he was just getting started because in the fall of that year, he spent $85 billion supporting AIG Insurance. But he had more to go. That October, he asked the U.S. Congress for and received $700 billion to get further involved in the financial markets. The ultimate free marketeer spending billions, billions. When I thought about this, I'm like, what's going on? But I realized he had a more general philosophy that he needed to follow. He loved this country. I believe that he loved this country and he loved the guiding principles upon which it was founded. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union. His general philosophy helped this country. Now, in the future, it may turn out that he made the wrong moves. It will take time to evaluate that. But I believe his motivation is the key as he attempted to master chaos. What are your general philosophies? What do you treasure? That's the key question when you enter into chaos. When it comes to knowing your parameters, there is an expert that needs to be quoted. Captain Jack Sparrow is portrayed by Johnny Depp in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Pay attention. The only rules that matter are these: what a man can do and what a man can't do. What can you do when you enter chaos? Can you spend all night working on a situation that just doesn't make any sense? Maybe you need to go home and stay grounded with your family. For me, I can't function mentally without a shower. I know these are my parameters. When you enter chaos, you have to be aware of your parameters. Otherwise, things will just stop working. Know those parameters when you enter chaos before it starts. That will set you up to be an effective fire dancer, an effective chaos master. And of course, you need to do some general practice. Once again, how do you practice chaos? Well, most of you have fairly ordered lives. You need to do that to survive and succeed. That's a good thing, except when it comes to facing chaos. You need some practice. And to do that, you need to stretch a little bit. I would encourage one, volunteering. Especially volunteering with organizations that do not have a lot of structure. You go up to help serve some food at a Thanksgiving dinner. Next thing you know, you're cleaning dishes. Then after that, you're cooking. Then after that, you're bookkeeping. You enter into a situation to help out and end up in a different situation. This happens because those organizations don't have the processes in place. That allows chaos to pop up again and again. And if you're there, you can learn. I need, of course, to also mention Toastmasters. Not just because it's the best place to learn communication and leadership skills, but also because it's filled with volunteers. And volunteers have busy lives. They're going along and they're committing to something. You show up, they don't. You have instant chaos and another opportunity to practice your chaos mastering skills. Preparation. Prepare yourself generally with your general, knowing your general philosophy, knowing your general parameters, and doing some general practice. Having that ready to go enables you to get ready when it's execution time. And when it's execution, you got to tee it up and use the four techniques of execution. That's a picture of David Okla, by the way, golfing. Four T's of execution are terms, tenacity, team, and test. Terms, tenacity, team, and test. Chaos comes upon you. Instantly set up your terms. How much time and how many resources are you going to invest in handling this chaos? People, money, supplies. What will you use? What tools do you need? What are you going to put into making chaos work for you? A classic example of this, of a true chaos master who knew his terms, was R.U. Darby. Does anybody know R.U. Darby's story? Napoleon Hill wrote about him in Think and Grow Rich. And R.U. Darby was a man known for this phrase, 3 feet from gold. What R.U. Darby did was he got into mining gold, that chaos of trying to find treasure in the midst of a mountain. Working in Colorado, he thought he had a great gold strike. He put his money and his resources, and he put as much time as he could into doing that. He found some gold, and then the gold stopped. And he thought, no, there's going to be more. So he started exploring all through the mountain, and he couldn't find any more gold. His resources started to run out. He could have kept on digging, but he said, no, there's no more gold left. He sold his equipment, and he sold all of the rights to the mine and went back to try to start another career. What happened next? The person who got the rights had a geologist look at it a few years later and found a huge gold deposit only 3 feet from where R.U. Darby stopped. 3 feet from gold. Now, the story may indicate to you that R.U. Darby just should have kept on going. But I believe he was a true chaos master. He set up his terms and he followed them. When he ran out of time and money and resources, he stopped. There's a happy ending for R.U. Darby. He went on to sell insurance and make millions. But as a true chaos master, he realized that chaos had defeated him. It was time to move on. I learned this story when I was younger from my very first roommate, George Edward Murphy III, also known as my brother, Duffy. Now, you got to feel sorry for Duffy a little bit because his two older siblings got their own room. Duffy got a room with me, the baby brother. And babies are the best. I just want to establish that right now. And little brothers can be tagalongs, Klingons, that just kind of irritate you. And Duffy sometimes got irritated with me, sometimes got mad at me. That happens. I don't necessarily blame him for that. And that being said, Duffy was an amazing brother because he had so much imagination. It was so fun to play with him. I don't blame myself for tagging along with him. He was creative, dynamic, energetic, everything I wanted to be. Duffy, let's do this. Duffy, let's do that. Duffy, and he'd, get out of here. You're embarrassing me. But there was one rule that Duffy had that you were never allowed to violate. You were not allowed to touch Duffy's stuff on his special desk. It was a little piece of plywood hinged up against the wall, and it had the coolest things that Duffy had found. An old bird's nest, dried out frog leg, and most importantly, fireworks. All that was so tempting to me. I never really touched any of this stuff. I just was so interesting, but I stayed away from it. One day, I was looking at it, and Duffy came in the room. Did you touch my stuff? Did you touch my stuff? No, I didn't touch it. You touched it, didn't you? He rushed for me and grabbed me from behind, and I started to struggle, but he was so much stronger than me. I couldn't get anywhere. And then he said, call for mommy, call for mommy. And I refused. Now, normally, I would call on my mother again and again to resolve any conflict and chaos between my brother and myself. But this time, I had my terms. So long as the limbs remained on my body, I wasn't going to say my magic phrase. And I struggled, and I struggled. And Duffy was yelling at me. He was mad, and I was stubborn. And then a miracle happened. I twisted in some way and jerked back and hipped Duffy up into the air. And he moved towards his desk with all his precious stuff. And he landed on top of it and crushed it and broke it and fell down with all of his stuff coming down on him. And he said the most beautiful word I've ever heard. Mommy! My mother came in, opened the door. She didn't understand the chaos. How come I wasn't the one crying? But that moment of setting my terms helped me realize that it was time to go beyond. Those terms are so important. Now, one reason I've chose this course to do this presentation is because of an experience I had when I was a youth minister. It showed me the power of chaos. Every month or so, I would meet with 16 youth leaders from the youth group to plan our next month's meeting. 16 teenagers together. It was a study in lunacy. Productive lunacy, but lunacy nevertheless. They would have so much fun throwing, eating, consuming food, and flirting with each other, and just talking. There was very little order. We knew we had to plan out 4 meetings for the next month, but they never stayed focused. There was one thing that we had. We had a term of 2 hours in order to get things done. So as they went through with me trying to get them back on track, them getting off track again, me trying to get them back on track, was that somehow out of that, and don't ask me how, I think it was divine inspiration, we came up with a beautiful plan that the rest of the youth group really enjoyed. Despite my inability to lead a perfectly organized meeting, they created an amazing schedule. Chaos was creative at that time, not destructive, creative. Know your terms. Those terms will help put the chaos in perspective and give you a shot to say, this is my limit, and beyond here, chaos stops. I go somewhere else, or I succeed. Terms, tenacity. Now, tenacity, I think, is very important once you set up your terms. Chaos can defeat you if you don't have those terms. But once you have them, you say, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to keep on going as long as I can within those boundaries. Because chaos is so demanding, so difficult to predict, you have to keep on going. You never know what little thing will change and bring order out of the disorder. Buddha had this tenacity. At 29, he said he wanted to find true enlightenment. And he kept on searching for 6 years. Finally, he said, I'm going to meditate. And he didn't meditate for 7 minutes or 7 hours or 7 days. He meditated for 7 weeks. 7 weeks. And success. He found what he was searching for. Enlightenment. That was tenacity. His quote, chaos is inherent in all compounded things. Strive on with diligence. When you enter into a chaos moment, you have your terms. Move forward within that and be tenacious. When I first joined AT&T as a tester, I really didn't know what I was doing, but I needed the job. And I couldn't make sense about what I was attempting to do. I would try one thing and try another, and I failed again and again. After a month of this and constantly going to my coworkers, I had a deadline and no help. I was working Saturday and Sunday. I was failing again and again. And since I was a contractor at that time, if I didn't succeed, I would lose my job. I still remember playing with the testing environment, playing with the data, trying to make it happen. And Sunday night, 7:30 p.m., it worked. It worked. I had my terms forced upon me, but that tenacity to keep on going. All through Saturday, all through Saturday night, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, I was tempted to give up, but that tenacity made a difference and allowed me to keep my job. Success. Order out of disorder. Well, after you do your tenacious thing and you got your terms, you're going to need a team. I do not advise having chaos as a situation for a single activity for a single person. Get a team. Team have enabled us to do so much over time. They help us as a species survive. So when you enter chaos, get a team. Since I'm a big Notre Dame football fan, and it's college football season, and Notre Dame this Saturday is going to beat Stanford University by a large margin, I'm sure, I'm almost required by law to quote Coach Rockne. Right here. The secret is to work less as individuals and more as a team. As a coach, I play not my 11 best, but my best 11. My best 11. There are great individuals out there who only work as individuals. And when you enter into chaos, you won't work well with them. You need a team, but you need people who are team members. At AT&T, we're a national company. We have people spread out all across the nation. So we often have to have the dreaded conference calls. Conference calls are highly interactive, sometimes too much so. But what communicates the most on conference calls? Tone of voice. Tone of voice. Not the words you say, but how you say them. I have known people who I thought were really nice when I would meet them in the hallway turn into beasts on a conference call. Nobody would listen to them because they shattered the team. They shattered the cohesiveness. They caused even more chaos. It was so sad because often they were the people with the correct information. I've known several people in the past 11 years working at AT&T, brilliant people who could not team. And so they eventually were let go. They were better than me. But because they couldn't work together, couldn't help us handle the chaos of information technology work, they were gone. You need a team, so you need to team. And as a chaos master, be aware that having a team during the midst of chaos is something that's going to test your abilities of communication and leadership. But if you handle that well, your team will benefit you and make it possible for you to survive. If you have that team, you're thinking and talking, you got to do one more thing. You need to test. You definitely have to test. And what you're going to do is try something. Try anything. With chaos, you don't know what's going to work. Maybe try the stuff that worked before. It doesn't work anymore. But in that failure, you learn something. Failing again and again. I love this quote from David Cronenberg, a film director who works in the chaotic movie industry. Everybody's a mad scientist, and life is their lab. We're all trying to experiment, to find a way to live, to solve problems, to fend off madness and chaos. Whatever you need to test, test it. When chaos hits you, chaos hits you. Now, there's a certain holiday coming up this Thursday. Does anybody know what it is? Thanksgiving, indeed. All right. Easter. Thank you, Dr. David. Appreciated that. How many of you always have smooth Thanksgiving dinners? No, wait, we have one person here. Okay. Was how do you define smooth? Non-chaotic. It was definitely a thing. Thanksgiving's an interesting feast day because of the combination of work, impending holidays, and you take this time to put on a massive dinner and bring people traveling all around the world to a single location. That is ripe for chaos. You may cook every night, but Thanksgiving will challenge you. Now, in my family, we've always tried to have a nice Thanksgiving. But it hasn't always been that way. How would you say they ended up rather dynamically? We tried different things, different locations. Not only relatives' house, like my sister's or my mom's or family friends or brother up in Grass Valley. We've tried a bunch of different things. We tried having more of potluck, not doing turkey, getting a ham in advance. We even tried it at a church hall with a DJ. But it was chaos again and again. Until 3 years ago, we stumbled upon the most wonderful thing in the world, a restaurant. Now, with a restaurant, somebody else does the cooking. Yes! And somebody else cleans the dishes. Now, in our family, us Murphy people, we like to kick back after dinner. My brother-in-law, Gary, he just does not like a thing called a dirty dish. If there's a dirty dish, Gary gets in motion. He was in the Army. I think that was part of his training. So I think this is the first Thanksgiving where after the meal, Gary is just kind of relaxing and not doing dishes. It's the most wonderful thing in the world, allowing that Thanksgiving feast to just be fun. So this Thursday, while you guys are doing the chaos of turkey and stuffing and, oh my God, we forgot the cranberry sauce, I'll be thinking of you when I'm with my family at sunset at Skate's Restaurant in Berkeley. I encourage restaurants highly for Thanksgiving events. So much fun. Well, after you execute the test and find a solution to chaos, or maybe chaos defeats you, it's time to move to the next stage. And that is reflection. I want to stop and say the steps of execution, you've probably heard a lot of those things before. I believe what's different about this workshop is the focus on preparation and this next step, reflection. Reflection is a key part of being a chaos master. Being able to dance with that fire of chaos and bring order out, you have to reflect after the chaos moment. So reflection is in three steps. You evaluate yourself, you do some qualitative analysis, and you take time for silence. When you evaluate yourself, don't criticize yourself. Evaluate yourself to motivate yourself. I think I missed a quote from Socrates there. A little bit of chaos. But evaluate yourself to motivate yourself in such a way that you're willing to enter chaos again. You probably did several things wrong when attempting to deal with that chaos. That happens. Don't beat yourself up about it. Move forward and say, how do I grow from it? Yeah. Acknowledge what you did well and maybe say, hey, I could have done something differently. In doing so, you are prepared for the next time that it happens. Evaluate to motivate. Dale Carnegie and his friends, in his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, said, any fool can criticize. It takes a wise person to affirm. Affirm yourself with the wisdom that chaos is rife with failure. Be ready for it. Evaluate to motivate and get ready the next time that fire comes there and you need to do some fire dancing. Also, give yourself the gift of qualitative analysis. Qualitative analysis, not quantitative analysis. Oops. I'm going to skip back to a story. Excuse the chaos here. I just added this story because I just got this for the presentation. I know somebody who had a bad habit. How many of you ever had a bad habit? Okay, we have one. Okay, this person only has one bad habit. Let me say this. She only had one bad habit. A couple of weeks ago, my boss, Lori Wraith, was standing on a chair, reaching for stuff on the top shelf. Now, she's been doing this for years, ever since she was a little kid, always going for the good stuff up on top and using a chair again and again. She knew it was wrong. She knew it was unsafe. But for hundreds of times, she had done it without any negative repercussions. And then 2 weeks ago, chaos struck. She was in her pantry going for something, not necessarily focused, and somehow she got her foot tangled in the chair. She was stuck, and she started to get the foot out, and she started to slip. She went down, down, and trying to save herself, destroyed the pantry and hurt her back at the same time. Chaos had struck. Now, if Lori were to get on a chair again, she'd probably be okay. But she evaluated the situation and realized, no more chairs. No more chairs. She has realized it's time. She's grown up enough for a safety ladder. So that evaluation said, yep, I could have done something different. Chaos might hit again. But as opposed to sticking with the chair, I'm getting a safety ladder. She evaluated herself positively and realized what she needed to change. And she grew from the chaos moment. She'll never fall again, we hope. All right, with that, I want to emphasize that you need to give yourself the gift of qualitative analysis, not quantitative analysis. I think there's a big difference because, as the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister of England, Benjamin Disraeli, once said, there are three kinds of lies: lies, damn lies, and statistics. Trying to use the numbers of comparison and contrast may cause post-chaotic stress. It won't be worth it. Because what you end up is comparing apples to apples. But the apples are completely different. It's no longer a valid chaos. And attempting to do so is just going to bring out more chaos. A recent example of this was funny to me. I was reading the paper because a year ago, a place called Stonestown Galleria, does anybody know where Stonestown Galleria is? Right here in the city, okay. They had a moment of chaos. last November. Does anybody know what that chaos is? Okay. The movie with the teenage girls. Yeah. Anybody know the name of the movie?
Twilight.
Twilight. A year ago at Stone Sound Galleria, before Twilight came out, its male lead came to sign autographs, Rob Pattinson. Now, Rob Pattinson wasn't really known at that time, but as you can see, he's very popular in the back row. Thank you, Lori and Brandy. Rob Pattinson wasn't really well known. His biggest role before then had been in a Harry Potter film. He came, and the people at Stone Sound Galleria expected, just some people are going to come, sign the autographs. It's going to be great drive-up business. What it was a riot of squealing teenage girls and some people who are a little older than teenage girls. They wanted to see Rob Pattinson so much, they were upset when they didn't get the magic bracelet to get in there and see them. And they started to stampede. Stone Sound had to cancel everything, close off everything. Several people I know who were there were disappointed. They were heartbroken. And they went home. Later on, Stone Sound reopened, and a few people did get to meet Rob Pattinson. But Stone Sound felt it had learned its lesson. This year, they had another autograph moment for the next movie in the series, New Moon, the second of the four that are part of this series. And they dared to say, let's do it again. They changed their process and procedures. And sure enough, it was smooth. Everybody followed. Nobody was trampled. Nobody cried or was hurt. The quantitative analysis would lead you to say, hey, this was better than last year. But there was one big difference. They did not have Rob Pattinson there. They had two actors who were in supporting roles in the new film. So what they did is they did an incorrect evaluation and said their quantitative analysis says, hey, my process works, when in truth, it doesn't work, not necessarily. Try it next year, those same processes and procedures, and bring back Rob, you will probably see more chaos because he's even more popular now. So be aware of quantitative analysis failing you at the end of a chaos moment. Also, take the time for silence. Silence is very important. Thomas Carlyle says, silence is the element in which great things fashion themselves. A few years ago, I was ending a romantic relationship, and it ended in confusion and bitterness. To me, that's the ultimate chaos. I didn't know how to handle it. So I went away to a monastery for a week of silence. And in that silence, I found what I needed to discover within myself about the truth of that situation. It was extremely powerful. It was also the greatest adventure of my life. I've never been so challenged and so stretched as a week of silence. A week without talking, a Murphy without talking. It's amazing. Some of my friends would agree. That week was powerful. After experiencing that, silence, whether for a few minutes or for an extended time, cannot be recommended by me enough. So after chaos happens, whether you succeeded or whether chaos defeated you, take time to reflect. And in doing so, realize that you need to get ready again for chaos because it's a constant. It's going to come back again and again. But don't face that reality with fear. Because as Carl Jung, who explored the chaotic folds of the human mind, discovered, in all chaos there is a cosmos, in all disorder a secret order. To summarize, before you hit chaos, prepare. Know your general philosophy, parameters, and do some general practice. Then when chaos does hit, remember the four T's. You execute with your terms, tenacity, teams, and testing. And then take the time, whether you got beat by chaos or chaos was a successful creative event for you, reflect, evaluate yourself, do yourself qualitative analysis, and go into silence. With that, I just want to give some time for questions. I know David has some questions for me. We're going to do a little grill the Murph, and we do have prizes for those who ask questions.
Our special thanks to Brendan Murphy for his comments here today at the Commonwealth Club. Again, my name is Dr. Okola. I'm the chairperson of the Personal Growth Forum, and I'll be moderating today's audience question period. So, Brendan, we have our first question. Are you ready?
Indeed.
Where are the lead boots you wore in forest fires?
Those lead boots, I still wear those. Who asked that question? We gotta give, who asked that question, the lead boots question? We give them the special prize.
Mom.
Oh, my mother asked that question. Okay, so those were big boots, and you wear those for safety. And I just want to say, you know, I don't know, does anybody else here overpack?
Brendan, I'm sorry. Yeah. I have to interject. Yeah. She has more in here. That burnt, and your toes, and the nail polish.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. So that's another story. Thank you very much for bringing up that other story. And there's no chaos like family. Yes, indeed. So I just want to say that I bought boots that had metal toes and metal shanks, and you don't wear those in the Forest Service because those metal pieces warm up and burn your toes. But like any good chaos master, I overpack trying to prepare for all possibilities. Thank you, Mother, for those great questions.
I got another question, Brendan. What can be said about those that are particularly adept at creating their own chaos and not very inclined to turn to team with others to resolve? This handwriting is just as bad as mine.
No, I think I got the point. If I was
and there's one more thing.
Oh, okay.
And are they just a black hole in the chaotic universe?
Well, this must be a coworker of mine. I think so. Yeah, there's people who cause chaos out there, and I think leadership does make a difference. Who asked that question? That's a multi-part question. You get that over there? Okay, yeah, fantastic. There we go. Fantastic. Thank you, Michael. There are people who are out there who make that chaos repeat again and again, and they never learn. They never learn. But it's, once again, I believe, a gradual process of testing your leadership to make the limits work with that person, trying to get the best out of them. Once again, we just finished a major project, and one of the key architects in that project, he was let go a month before we finished because his brilliance wasn't worth it. He was holding us back. And once he left, the team was productive, was successful. And that makes a huge difference. But the leadership of one of my coworkers, Brandy, enabled us to get through. She kept on testing different ways to do that and eventually gave him the lead boot to get him out of there.
I have another question, Brendan. How do you resolve conflicts such as terms and tenacity? For instance, RU Darby gave up gold mining, which conflicts with tenacity.
Yeah, and I think that's the way. Who asked that question? By the way, we're trying to, it's all anonymous here. Oh, Ying Sang, fantastic. Oops, there we go. Here, let me give this to David here. That's the key to mastering chaos, is that term of time and resources. You can spend $1 million on a chaotic situation, probably going to solve it every time. But if you don't have that money to spend, what do? You find what is a reasonable limit to put forth and then say, if I don't get it by then, that chaos defeated me. And I love the story of R.U. Darby because he got defeated by not being able to find the rest of the gold. However, he went on to be very successful. His story and that gold, they weren't meant to be together. But he went on and found another story, his other path. He left the chaos behind. It won, but he was tenacious while doing it.
Brendan, I have another question. How do you control the fear that automatically happens during chaos and crisis?
Yeah, and I think that's a, who asked that one? Okay, fantastic. This game, by the way, is the ultimate chaos game. You control the fear through that preparation. I think a lot of people know things about tenacity and testing and team and terms. They know those stuff. But what is your preparation going to do for you? And it's going to prevent you from being overwhelmed by chaos. It's going to give you the opportunity to say, I can handle this. I know. And if I can't handle it, I know when to stop and move on and do something else.
Now, the question, what recommendations do you have for working with a chaotic boss or in a chaotic agency or organization?
Sure. Oh, that's fun. So your leader is a chaos master, but not the good kind. Your chaos master, the fire kind. So you're trying to dance around, and what happens with a chaos boss is you're putting out fires all the time. Because like chaos, they start fires and share the flame all over the place. What are you going to do? That is a tough situation. I think, once again, set up your terms. You're going to try this, this, and this, trying to work with your boss in subtle ways. Why don't we do it this way? Oh, boss, how about this? You suggest ideas. You lead your own life, suggest and try to help the boss. And then at a certain point, there is no choice. You need to get out of there. I don't know who asked that question. Oh, there we go, Karen. Thank you so much. Good question. Yeah?
Another question. What are some effective ways to team build when your team is in different parts of the country?
This is the ultimate Toastmaster question for me, because Toastmasters focuses on tone of voice. What is your tone of voice, and what are you going to do? Use that tone of voice to make people feel welcome. My conference calls start at 1 o'clock sharp. We don't start business till 105, maybe 106. As people come onto the conference call, we ask them how they're doing. It is a waste of time from a purely logical perspective. But that welcoming moment of 5 to 6 minutes makes all the difference in building that relationship. Hey, how's the weather out there? I know the weather of Montreal, Canada, Chicago, New Jersey, Atlanta, oh, every week. I know exactly what's going on, because that's what we talk about. And we build relationships through weather conversations or other little details that show our bond of relationship.
Brendan, I have run out of questions. Does anybody else have any more questions for Brendan?
Oh, one over here. Sure.
Please repeat it.
And then,
please repeat the question.
Sorry, the question was that fear is out there, and sometimes you don't have the ability to set your terms. And so fear is going to be with you, and you're like, oh my God, when's it going to end? Because I can't let it end. But on the flip side of not having that time limitation, it's also a freedom to say, I will be here as long as I need to be here. I would encourage you to say, okay, this may not turn out how I want. I'm afraid of it, but I have to keep going. If you know that general philosophy of that situation, you're saying, I'm going to keep going. Maybe it's because out of loyalty or other values you may have, you just keep going and let that philosophy guide you and take over for the fear. Push that fear out of there with that general philosophy. Great question.
We have time for one more question. Sure. And I think I know the answer to this.
Okay.
How do you stay calm during chaos? My answer would be breathe.
It is breathing. I think, who asked that? That's a great question. All right, fantastic. Thank you. Thank you. And it is preparation. And then the reflection cycles of the chaos three-step, that you say, I am prepared for chaos. I know what I'm about. And you enter into chaos, it hits you. And I want to, you know, if it's an emergency chaos situation, which those are fairly rare, but if it does happen with that, then you need to just make decisions. And I think that is a difficult thing when you're saying, how am I going to be calm when everything's going crazy around me? If it is a non-emergency situation, then focus on the steps. You have different ways of preparing and executing than probably I recommended, but trust those. Trust your wisdom. Trust your training. And the fact that you're here today shows that you're open to learning and growing. Trust that and say, I can grow in the midst of that. I think that's the key. Don't let it get you. Know that you're going to be growing in chaos. The real sales call is, hey, chaos mastering is something that can benefit you. Don't run from chaos. So any more questions?
That's it.
Fantastic. Thank you, David. So before I conclude, I want to do some quick acknowledgments. First, I want to acknowledge my director of this workshop, Nicole Dupuy, right here. She's been clicking slides, even though I messed up a little bit. Thank you, Nicole, for going through with me when things got a little chaotic. I think I skipped a few slides here and there. I want to thank Dr. David Okola for inviting me here today. Thank you, David. And I especially want to thank you. It takes a special type of leader to come to a chaos workshop and be open to this chaos process. So you are already chaos masters just by being here today. A hand for you as well. And to conclude, I need to just bring up two of my favorite chaos quotes. This one from Andy Stone, one of my coworkers in the wonderful world of information technology at AT&T. He's been part of that chaos world for 25 years. The only person who likes change is a baby with a wet diaper. Any change, good or bad, causes chaos. So being able to deal with that is very important. And this one from Tom Barrett, a Wisconsin politician. Chaos in the world brings uneasiness, but it also allows the opportunity for creativity and growth. When you hit chaos or it hits you, I encourage you to do the fire dance of a chaos master, to find the order in the disorder, and to grow through the situation. And I believe if you do that, you eventually will be dancing with the stars. Dr. David.
Again, our special thanks to Brendan Murphy for his comments here today. Today's presentation was called Chaos Master, Leading Through Disorder and Attaining Order. Let's put our hands together one more time and give another applause for his enlightening comments here today. We also like to thank our audience here at the club, as well as our radio audience at home. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 106th year of enlightened discussion, is now adjourned.